Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just before I begin, we'll dispose of the elephant in the room. You can see I've got a whole lot of shaking going on, as they say here. Ignore that whilst I'm talking. I'll do my best. It's not because I'm in ecstasy. Unfortunately, we're realizing the truth of Prabhupada's words. Not unfortunately, actually fortunately. But anyway, just so that everybody feels at ease, yes, I do have the shakes. Okay, so we're on the eighth canto, chapter 5, the demigod's appeal to the Lord for protection. I'm going to read the previous verse to what's on the board. Number 35, there's no purport, and then we'll read the one that's on the verse there, on the board. So the translation of verse 35, fire which is born for the sake of accepting oblations in ritualistic ceremonies is the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Fire exists within the depths of the ocean to produce wealth. And fire is also present in the abdomen to digest food and produce various secretions for the maintenance of the body. May that supremely powerful personality of Godhead be pleased with us. And then text 36 is on the board. Yach chakshu asit tarani devayanam trayimayo Brahmana Esha Dishnam Dwaram Cha Mukte Amritam Chamrityahu Prasidatam Na Sa Mahavibhuti Yachchakshurasit Tarani Devayanam Trayimayo Brahmana Esha Disyam Dwaram Chamukte Amritam Chamrityu Prasidatam Nasa Mahavibhuti Yach Chakshurasit Tarani Devyanam Trayimayo Brahmana Esha Disnyam Dwaram Chamukteram Ritam Chamrityu Prasidatam Nasa Mahavibhuti. Yachchakshurasit tarani devayanam Trayimayo brahmana esha disnyam Dwaram chamukteram ritam chamrityu Prasidatam nasa mahavibhuti. Yachchakshurasit tarani devayanam Trayimayo brahmana esha disnyam Dwaram chamukteram ritam chamrityu Prasidatam nasa mahavibhuti. Yachchakshurasit tarani devayanam Trayimayo brahmana esha disyam Dwaram cha mukter amritam cha mrityu. Prasidatam nasa maha vibhuti. Ladies. Yachakshara sitarni devayanam. Traimayo brahmana esha disnyam. Dwaram cha mukter amritam nimamchu. Prasidatam nasa maha vibhuti. Ladies. Yachakshara sitarani devayanam. Traimayo brahmana esha disyam. Dwaram cha mukter amritam cha mrityu. Prasidatam nasa maha vibhuti. Yachakshara sitarni devayanam. Traimayo brahmana esha disnyam. Dwaram cha mukter amritam cha mrityu. Siddhatam nasa maha vibhuti. Yachakshara sitarani devyanam. Traimayo brahmana esha disnyam. Dwaram cha mukter amritam cha mrityu. Prasidatam nasa maha vibhuti. Yat, that which, chakshuhu, I, asit, became, tarani, the sun god, devayanam, the predominating deity, for the path of deliverance for the demigods. Trayimayaha, for the sake of guidance in. Sorry, for the sake of guidance in Karmakanda Vedic knowledge. Brahmanaha, of the supreme truth. Esha, this. Disnyam, the place for realization. Dwaram cha, as well as the gateway. Muktahe, for liberation. Amritam, the path of eternal life. Cha, as well as. Mrityuhu, the cause of death. Prasidatam, may he be pleased. Naha, upon us. Saha, that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahavibhuti, the All-Powerful. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Sun God marks the path of liberation, which is called Archiradi Vartma. He is the chief source for understanding of the Vedas. He is the abode where the absolute truth can be worshipped. He is the gateway to liberation. And he is the source of eternal life as well as the cause of death. The Sun God is the eye of the Supreme Lord. May that Supreme Lord, who is supremely opulent, be pleased with us. Please repeat. The Sun God marks the path of liberation, which is called Archiradi Vartma. He is the chief source for understanding of the Vedas. He is the abode where the absolute truth can be worshipped. He is the gateway to liberation. And he is the source of eternal life, as well as the cause of death. The Sun God is the eye of the Lord. May that Supreme Lord, who is supremely opulent, be pleased with us. Purport. The sun god is considered to be the chief of the demigods. He is also considered to be the demigod who watches the northern side of the universe. He gives help for understanding the Vedas. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 552, Yachchakshuresha Savita Sakala Grahanam Raja Samasta Suramurti Rashesha Teja Yasyagnaya Brahmati Samrita Kala Chakro Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The sun, full of infinite effulgence, is the king of all the planets and the image of the good soul. The sun is like the eye of the Supreme Lord. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in pursuance of whose order the sun performs his journey, mounting the wheel of time. The sun is actually the eye of the Lord. In the Vedic mantras, it is said that unless the Supreme Personality of Godhead sees, no one can see. Unless there is sunlight, no living entity on any planet can see. Therefore, the sun is considered to be the eye of the Supreme Lord. That is confirmed here by the words Yachchakshur Asit, and in the Brahma Samhita by the words Yachchakshur Eva Savitar. The word Savitar means the sun god. Okay. So this reminds me of a little anecdote that Upendra used to tell. 1967, when he was a new devotee, he was walking in a park with Srila Prabhupada. He had heard that Krishna is in every atom, and in between every atom, he's in everybody's heart. He's everywhere. So he asked Srila Prabhupada that when you're a pure devotee, how do you see Krishna everywhere? Is it there are like billions of little tiny Krishnas everywhere you look? So Prabhupada gave him a practical example. He said, pointed to his shoes. So he said, now these are my shoes. Now, if you see my shoes somewhere, what do you think? So Upendra said, well, I think they're Prabhupada's shoes. He said, yes, so you think of me. You see my shoes, you don't see me. But by seeing my shoes, you see me, because you know it's mine, they're mine, and therefore you think of me. So in the same way, he said, a pure devotee, everywhere he looks, he sees everything in relationship with Krishna. And in this way, he's always fully meditating on the Supreme Lord. There was a couple of young reporters that came to see Prabhupada in 1974 in Melbourne. And they were asking nice questions. They were kind of very submissive and polite. And at one point, one of these boys asked Srila Prabhupada, do you see God everywhere? Or do you see God everywhere? And we had actually, I think we'd put out a poster the year before with the side profile of Srila Prabhupada from Back to Godhead. Ram Prasad did this poster. And on the top, the title was, He Sees God. And we plastered this poster up all over Melbourne and Sydney. He sees God. So these young men wanted to know, do you actually see God? So Prabhupada thought for a second. And then he said, will you accept whatever I tell you? So then when they said yes, then Prabhupada said, yes, I'm seeing Krishna at every moment. So seeing God is not an ordinary thing. Most people don't believe that you can see God. They have, you know, even if they have some faith in God, generally speaking, they have no identity to, you know, they don't understand him as the person, personality of Godhead. They see, you know, some kind of, or feel some kind of all-pervasive power or influence. They know there's some kind of higher principle. You know, this is in the 12-step programs, you know, you have to recognize your higher truth or whatever it may be, yeah, and take shelter in that. So, but for the devotees, it's very, very specific. I was just talking last night with Yadabara Prabhu and Shamasunda and Nishringananda Prabhu, We were just kind of observing that Prabhupada was the first one that really told us that God is a person. I know just before I joined, I was desperately trying to understand what that little word meant, G-O-D, God. It was a real bugbear in my thinking. I couldn't go past it, and I couldn't get any realization what God was. But I knew somehow or another I had to answer that question. So I read a paragraph from a BTG that gave a description of God, that God is omniscient, God is omnipresent, God is omnipotent, and God is a person, and his name is Krishna. When I read that, that was it. That was my moment of epiphany. I suddenly understood. And as soon as Prabhupada said, and God is a person, I thought, that's it. That's the answer to everything. Yeah, this was the first person that actually said it. Everybody else was talking. You know, you can talk about omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence. These are all features. But God is a person, that revelation we never had. And Prabhupada was the one who gave it to us. So he taught us how to see God in everything. And really what the demigods are saying here is, they're giving us information how to identify the deity behind everything. All these material phenomena that they're describing, fire and how the Lord is, you know, the sun is the eye of the Lord, and it mounts the wheel of time, it brings birth, it brings death, it brings eternal life. All of these things are attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as it's mentioned in the verse, that, you know, we're recognizing through these elements your presence. So recognizing the deity in everything, that's what Prabhupada taught us to do. So with your permission, I'll talk a little something about Prabhupada and deities. Yeah, because we see that in ISKCON, one of the first programs that Prabhupada instituted was the installation of deities. Yeah, there was actually a paper that was written about Srila Prabhupada by Professor Kenny from Arkansas Little Rock University in 1976. We received this paper in Vrindavan in, I think, about November of 76. Jagadish was the secretary at that time. And this man had written a paper for the American Academy of Religions. He was an observer of ISKCON. He'd been to New Vrindavan and met devotees, etc. And he wrote this paper called A.C. Bhaktivedanta as Swami, Guru, and Avatar. And he explained how Srila Prabhupada began as a simple Swami, then he kind of morphed into the Guru, the teacher, and then eventually, probably after his disappearance, then he would be worshipped by ISKCON devotees as an avatar. And he was very careful to say that in ISKCON we don't worship ordinary people as the Supreme Lord. But when he means avatar, he's talking about a Shaktivesh avatar, or somebody that's specially empowered and is practically as good as God for his followers. And he noted that everything that Prabhupada said or did, that was what we molded our lives upon. So it was a nice paper. And we read it to Prabhupada, and at the end of it, he said, yes, he's an intelligent man. He liked it. It might not have been, you know, exact in all the details, but this was his observance. So his observance was that the guru part came in round about 1968. ISKCON began to take some shape. Beginning of 68, there were about five temples. Nothing outside of North America, of course, at that point, but soon to be. But Prabhupada was beginning to initiate or give second initiation to some of his disciples. They'd had a couple of years chanting, and he got them preaching. They were putting out Back to Godhead magazine. They were opening new temples on their own. And so Prabhupada was, you know, giving second initiation. Because second initiation means that you become qualified or it recognized as qualified to worship the deity. And so from 68 onwards, Prabhupada began planning how to install large numbers of deities in ISKCON. We know, of course, that Radha Lundaneshwara were the first big deities to be installed. But we also know that the smaller deities' regular worship was going on here in Los Angeles. Shilavati, I think, was the first, and then Jamuna. They were personally trained by Srila Prabhupada. And, of course, when Prabhupada bought this building, this complex, he set up New Dwarka, Los Angeles, as a training center for all the rest of the movement. And he began telling all the different temple presidents, now we have set the standard here in Los Angeles. You should come to L.A., spend a month here, study everything, get trained up, and then go back and implement what you've seen there. So Prabhupada began to install deities from about 69 onwards. Of course, typically, he was very ambitious. He had a plan. He wrote to some businessman in India that he wanted 300 sets of Radha Krishna deities for his centers all around the world. And where would you put 300 sets of deities? But Prabhupada was expecting that there would be an increase. And so he wanted some donation from these gentlemen. The Beelers donated a few sets of deities. Dalmia, I think, Trust, they donated a few. And Prabhupada started soliciting them to give deities so that they could be shipped out here to Los Angeles or to New York or London. And the devotees then could enter into a very formal style of worship. Before the deities were introduced, it was a little bit loose. I mean, there was Sadhana, obviously. But the regular temple program, as we know it, as we're experiencing it, you know, with Mangalarati and then greeting of the deities and, you know, playing of the Govindam album and all these things, these came in the early 70s, once the deities were established. But it would have been very difficult to set up a real Sadhana, common sadhana for all of his disciples without building that around the worship of the deity. So Prabhupada regarded worshipping of the deity to be very, very important, and he compared it to the mystic yogis following the, you know, Ashtanga Yoga path. The culmination of their meditation is to see the Lord within the heart, to see the deity. So Prabhupada said, why do we have to do that? You just walk into any one of our temples. In 1 minute, you can see the deity. Yeah, and that, he said, is as good as the yogis after all their millions of years of practice, you know, seeing the Lord within the heart. But by, you know, the mercy of the Lord, he appears in his deity form. We can see him immediately. Because whether we actually see him or not, that's another thing. Yeah, the demigods, they're describing how they're seeing the presence of the Lord in all the different elements and movements of the universe. But although Krishna is actually everything and in everything and everything is in him, he's also hidden. It requires some kind of special eyesight, just like Arjuna on the Battle of Kurukshetra. He was given special eyesight to see this universal form, because he was already seeing Krishna in person. But the idea of the Lord pervading everything and everything resting upon him, that Krishna showed him when he demonstrated the universal form. But he gave him a special kind of eyesight so that he could see him in that particular feature. So seeing the deity is not simply also a question of walking in and, oh, I can see Krishna, you know. People see the deity, but they don't see the deity. Yeah, they see whatever they want to see, generally speaking. In Vrindavan one time, during Karatik, I was kind of marveling at how many people were coming to see the deities. And in Vrindavan now it's become a tradition. You buy lots of flower garlands, take them in, and then offer them to the deities on the altar. It's like Tirupati. It's become the tradition there that people shave their heads, they offer their hair, they offer all their gold and bangles and so many things and their money to Balaji. So in Krishna Balaram Mandir, people tend to offer these very nice flower garlands. So I was watching and it was really packed up. I saw all these people going forward and, you know, one altar to another, bowing their heads, looking at the deity, saying some prayers, moving to the next. So I thought, I wonder what these people actually are seeing. What are they praying for? So I saw one middle-aged man. He was doing the, you know, the routine he went through. So I went over to him and I asked him, I introduced myself. And so then I asked him, I said, when you, before the deity, like Gaunatai or Krishna Balaram, said, what do you actually pray for? So he said, oh, he said, so that we can merge, we can become one, So then he gets this whole Mayavadi thing about merging with the deity. So he thought the deity was actually him. In a kind of a way. So he wasn't really seeing Gaunatai or Krishna Balaram or Radha Shyamasunda. He was seeing what he wanted to see. So seeing the deity is not an easy thing. It requires training to understand how the deity is in everything, how to see anything and everything that would normally we would consider to be material, but see that as a vehicle through which Krishna is acting, and thereby detecting the presence of the deity in everything. This is Krishna consciousness, that wherever we go, whether we're in the temple or out of the temple, in the desert, under the ocean, in the sky, wherever, but we always are aware of the presence of the deity in everything. This is our search. Of course, the material scientists are also looking for that. I mean, actually, these verses, I've just realized these would be good substance for some presentations in the temple of the Vedic planetarium, you know, the Vedic cosmos, viewing the universe as a living organism, seeing that there's life actually directing all the mechanisms of material nature. This is our business. So we want to somehow or another detect the Supreme Lord in everything. This is Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada was very keen to introduce us to the regulation of deity worship, the service that we can offer to the deity in different ways, cooking for him, clothing him, etc. As Prabhupada often said, you cannot, clothe the universal form. Where will you get all the cloth from? Even if you could fit it. Feeding Krishna, that concept of feeding God. This happens when you're talking about the deity. You make an offering and he accepts it and he actually eats what we offer. And then he very kindly leaves it, on the plate for us to enjoy as his prasadam. So deity worship is, in one sense, like a little bit of a fast track to becoming fully Krishna conscious, understanding that wherever we go, God is always there. Krishna is always apparent. And it's up to us to make ourselves fit for seeing God. And it's not, an ordinary thing to actually understand Krishna in everything. So the material scientists, they're looking at the mechanisms of the material world, the universe. They're trying to guess how it's all going on. But because they're atheists, they don't see actually the principle on which everything rests. The demigods are not atheists. That's what it means to be a demigod, that you're not an atheist and you're aware of how Krishna pervades everything. So just like nowadays they have this Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland. So $10 billion was spent on that machine. It's meant to split particles. They had molecules to start with. Then they got down to atoms. Then they weren't satisfied with that because they could see movement, things were moving around. They couldn't understand what is the force that's moving all of these. You look into the atom, you find protons, neutrons, etc. And they're also moving, so what is making them move? So now with the collider, they want to split the particles of the atom and find out ultimately what is the uniting principle, what is the field on which all of this activity, this movement that's going on in the universe is based on. So they're very excited, this Higgs boson, that may have discovered it. But what is it? It's just a description of what they think is the way that material particles are moving. They see they're moving, and if there's movement, that means there's some force there. What that force is, they cannot tell. So they're splitting everything, delving deeper and deeper and deeper into the minutiae of material energy, but they're still not finding out what the moving principle is. They'll never see it, actually. As no matter how deep they go, if you split a particle, you'll find there's some other particles that compose that particle. And you'll never actually get to the point where you'll find out how everything is actually moving and working. Because it's all based on consciousness. And that's what they're missing. These people are unconscious. Yeah, they're trying to see, but they're unconscious. They don't know what they're looking at. Yeah, they see the sun, but they don't know what the sun actually is. We have our own impression of what the sun is and how it moves. But here we have another understanding of the sun, which is given by the demigods. It's entirely different. So the whole material setup is quite different from what we perceive. Just as that man went before the deity but couldn't see Krishna, in the same way they're looking at, you know, material nature, but they don't see the deity who is actually energizing this material energy. So Prabhupada was very keen for us then to identify God as a person, to understand the deity of the Lord, and to learn how to worship him and get his mercy. Because the only way you're ever going to see anything is by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as with the sun. If there's no sun, if there's no light, nobody sees anything on any planet. So in the same way, just as we have to have the sun illuminate everything so that we can see, in the same way, Krishna illuminates everything if a person becomes qualified to see him, to have his darshan. He gives his darshan. We don't come and take darshan. Yeah, the darshan is given to us. It's a gift. Krishna reveals himself to his devotees. So that revelation is what we want. So Prabhupada was working on the platform of revelation. And I thought it would be nice just to see a little bit of Prabhupada's background. Sometimes he talked about his experiences with deities. We were in December of 1976 going to Mahabaleshwar. Prabhupada had been invited to, it's a hill station. It's kind of between Pune and Bombay. There's a mountain range. And this life member, Malhotra. They're a very rich family from Pune. They were some of our earliest supporters. And they had some land up in Mahabaleshwar. It's like a spa village. You know, people go there for their health and all that stuff. And so he had heard about New Vrindavan, and maybe even he had visited it in the early 70s. So he thought it would be nice to have a similar kind of program in India. So he had a bit of land, and he offered that to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, all right, we'll go up there and see what it's like. Because he didn't really need to go there himself. He could have sent some disciples, Giriraj, Gopal Krishna, etc. But just to please these life members, because they were very supportive, they were very influential, Prabhupada thought they could do a lot for spreading Krishna consciousness. So he decided to go there. Although actually it was very troublesome for him. By that time, his health was deteriorating quite markedly. He was getting very, very weak. And to, you know, go up to the hill station there was going to be a little bit of an arduous task. So we had flown down, I think the 22nd morning, to Pune. And at that time, Pune was a fairly small city. As I remember it, I might be inaccurate, but as I remember it, the airport was actually like a tin shack, maybe as big as this room. That was the entire airport. None of these little twin-engine Fokker planes were flying in there. So we got on one of those. We flew down. The Malhotras picked us up at the airport. They took us to their home. They have a gigantic home in the most exclusive area of Pune. The cantonment area. They had one table. I mean, their dining table could seat 24 people at a time. That was their regular dining table. Anyway, they were interesting people. So Prabhupada, after having some breakfast, then they took us on a three-hour drive up into the hills. It was the only time, really, that I ever saw Prabhupada really physically distressed. Going up the mountains, of course, it's like a switchback. Every 100 meters, you know, you turn back, double bend like this for 3 hours. Prabhupada, you know, the motion of it was really making him feel sick. Somehow or another we got to the top, at least going up. without too much incident. Anyway, so naturally we were talking about different things. The Malhotras were, very excited to have Prabhupada's present with them. And at one point, they asked Srila Prabhupada about his family history. They'd explained how they had come from Punjab and to Maharashtra. So then they asked, as a matter of course, what about you? So in the course of the journey then, this was the 21st of December, Mr. Malhotra mentioned how his family had come to Maharashtra from the Punjab. He inquired a little about Srila Prabhupada's own spiritual antecedents, and Prabhupada obliged him with a brief overview of his family. He said, we are trained up because we belong to Krishna family. So this Radha Krishna worship is our family tradition. Our forefathers, my father, my maternal uncles, were all Vaishnava family, belonging to this Chaitanya Sampradaya. So we were trained up from the very beginning by our father and our mother. And Mr. Malhotra asked, your grandfather also? So Prabhupada said, yes, our whole family, and we have our family deity, Damodar. So in my childhood, I was worshipping Radha Krishna deities. And then fortunately, I got my Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So this was a good fortune that from the very beginning, we were trained up. So in the beginning of our life, I was worshipping Radha Krishna and playing with this Rathayatra. And the same thing is being done now, but on a larger scale. Nitya Yukta Upasate. There is no change. So that was a little mention there about that family deity, Damodar. I'm actually in fairly regular touch with Prabhupada's youngest son, Vrindavan Chandra Day. He still lives in Calcutta, him and his sister and his wife and family. I haven't really seriously pursued it yet, but I'd like to find where this Damodar deity is. He's with some maternal uncle or some member of the family, and they're keeping up the worship. So that was Prabhupada's natural thing right from the very beginning, to understand that God is the Supreme Person and to actually be worshipping him. And of course we know that when he was very small, he, after seeing Radha Govinda every day, he used to go, he asked that his father, now I want Radha Govinda as well. I want to worship them. So he bought them small. He bought him some small Radha Krishna deities. Prabhupada worshipped them for at least a couple of decades. Later on, he gave those deities to his sister, as we'll see. So Radha Govinda then, Prabhupada often affectionately referred to them, not our Radha Govinda, but the original Radha Govinda of the Mullics. There's a mention, Prabhupada wrote a letter to Achyutananda in January of 1970. He was trying to buy some land, and he was asking Achyutananda to go and try to identify land and get some deal going. So Prabhupada said, as far as the Calcutta land is concerned, your ambition to have a place like the Mullics Thakur Bhati, the pilgrimage of my childhood, is also my ambition. When I think of Radha Krishna, this is really significant. When I think of Radha Krishna, I think first of the Radha Govinda Vigraha of the Mullics, because from my very childhood, I am very devoted to the same deity. So that's who, here in New Dwarka, of course, you think about Rukmini Dwarkadish. In Mayapur, we think about Radha Madhav. I'm sure everybody has their favorite deity. Usually it's the first deity that you see when you join the movement. We have Radha Gopinath in Sydney. I always think about them, or at least I should do. I mean, when I think about deities, which is not very often, but I think about Radha Gopinath. So Prabhupada, whenever he thought about Radha Krishna, immediately he thought about Radha Govinda at the Mullics Thakubari. Thakubari means home. Thakur is God, the Supreme Lord. Bari means in Bengali house, so the house of God. So we actually were fortunate to go to see Radha Govinda with Srila Prabhupada in 1976. He had been in Mayapur for about 2 months. We had a wonderful festival there. and then we drove back to Calcutta. So on the 23rd of March, then Prabhupada had gotten an invitation to visit the Mullicks' Thakurbari. So in the evening then, we went to the Mullicks' house on Harrison Road, which is now called Jitendra Mohan Avenue, in the area where Prabhupada had lived as a child. He was greeted enthusiastically by Kashinath Mullick, along with other Mullick family members and friends. Just in case you're confused a bit about the name Mullick, because it's a Muslim name, but actually the family were not Muslims, obviously, but because they were so rich and influential, just like in England, the government, somebody does something extraordinary, they give them a title. Sir Paul McCartney or Lord this or, you know, whatever, OBE, MBE, whatever. So the Muslims also used to give out titles for influential Hindus. So Mullick was one such title. That's how they became the Mullicks, although they're actually part of the same Day family that Prabhupada was born into. So we went there. Prabhupada was very, very happy to see Radha Govinda, the original deities who had provided his spiritual inspiration as a small child. Although the area has changed quite considerably from his childhood days, and the little courtyard and shrine were quite run down, the deities are obviously still well looked after and offered daily puja. The Mullicks and other friends were delighted to see Srila Prabhupada, although he told us that now most of his contemporary friends were now dead. Only one or two of those present were actually people that he had played with during his childhood. So he told us that the deities had been worshipped by the Mullicks for over 200 years. At one time, they owned the entire area, because that's nearer to Howrah, that side of Calcutta. He said Radha Govinda actually owned the entire land from their Thakurbari all the way to Howrah. I guess later on it got sold off in different ways. But even now, if you go there on the opposite side of the road, there's a huge government building, 5-6 stories high. That actually belongs to Radha Govinda, and they get the income from that. So in a short speech, Prabhupada recalled his childhood history. His family had lived just down the street behind a building called Govinda Bhavan. And as a 3 or 4 year old, he would come every day to see the deities. He said, and that is the inspiration of my devotional life. Then I asked my father, you give me Radha Govinda deity, I shall worship. So my father was also a Vaishnav. He gave me small Radha Govinda deity, and I was worshipping him in my house. Whatever I was eating, I was offering. And I was following the ceremonies of this Radha Govinda with my small deities. So that deity is still existing. I have given to my sister. Unfortunately, there's a sad story behind that one. I won't mention it right now. Maybe it'll come up later on. So then I introduced Rathiatra. My Rathiatra was being performed very gloriously. My father used to spend the money. In those days, 10 rupees, 20 rupees, that was sufficient. I hired one kirtan party, and with all small friends, there was another day family here, so we all performed this Rathiatra ceremony. And according to our children's imagination, it was very gorgeous. So Gopishwara Mullick, he was my father's friend, so he was criticizing my father. Oh, you're performing Rathiatra ceremony and you're not inviting us? So my father used to say, well, that is children's play. What shall I invite you? You're a very big man. Oh, so you're avoiding. In the name of children, you are avoiding us. So on the whole, Prabhupada went on, this Rathiatra festival was very gorgeously performed. Then, imitating me, the others, my brother, he also introduced this Rathiatra. And all of them introduced Rathiatra, and the destination was this Thakurbari from here. So practically, Prabhupada said, what I'm doing now, the same thing. Radha Krishna worship and introduction of Rathiatra. I'm not doing anything else. You know very well, we are now performing Rathiatra ceremony practically in all the big cities of the world. In San Francisco, in Philadelphia, London, Melbourne, Paris. So the same thing. The same Radha Krishna worship and the same Rathiatra, but on a bigger scale. But the same thing had begun as a play from this quarter, from this Tackle Barry. So this Tackle Barry, Radha Govindaji, is my life. This is the beginning of my spiritual life. And after so many years, still Radha Govindaji has dragged me here. So Prabhupada went there because he apparently got an invitation, but he saw it was Radha Govinda dragging him there. So it is his kindness. Prabhupada humbly suggested that his good fortune was due to his previous activities. He quoted Bhagavad Gita 6:41, which states that the unsuccessful yogi takes birth in the family of pious and prosperous persons. So he said the Day family was practically the same as the wealthy Mullicks, and his own father was a pure Vaishnav. So with these opportunities provided by his birth, he said, he was simply developing them on a wider scale by Krishna's arrangement. Looking lovingly at Sri Sri Radha Govinda, he ended his little speech. So, about this movement, ISKCON, it may be said that this Radha Govinda deity is the inspiration. And you are all fortunate that you have come here. So, let us offer our obeisances. Prabhupada got down, touching his head to the floor, and then amid much affection from his old friends, he climbed back in the car to return to his own recently established Radha Govinda Mandir in Calcutta. That was why he called them. So it was a very, very nice visit. Prabhupada recalling his inspiration, how this whole movement grew from his relationship with Radha Govinda. So if anybody gets the chance to go to Calcutta, highly recommended. Actually, now the Calcutta Temple, they've started a one-day tour of, the Tirthas of Calcutta, wherever, Prabhupada was born. I just saw Radha Jivan Prabhu in Alachua a couple of days ago. He was telling me how he had actually provided the funds to buy the actual birth site of Srila Prabhupada. We had a small piece of land, which was a part of the much bigger estate when Prabhupada was there. And then, of course, later on it was all broken up and sold off. But just recently, they actually bought a much bigger piece of land, part of the same land, and it actually has the jackfruit tree on it still that Prabhupada was born underneath. So that there is now, you can go and see Prabhupada's birthplace. We also bought number one, Ultadingi Road Junction. That was the place where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati started his preaching from in 1920 through till 1930. It was a rented house. There's a picture of them all standing on the road in front of that building. So that building gradually has kind of become a bit disrepaired, and it was purchased by one developer a few years back, and he was going to tear it down and build some flats. It just happened that a couple of brahmacharis, I think from Bombay, had come to Calcutta, and on their own they decided to track down all the places of Prabhupada's pastimes. And of course this building was where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada had their first meeting on the roof in 1922. So these boys, somehow or another, they were looking and looking, they couldn't find it. Then they were told by the Gaudiya Math devotees that there was still one existing disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, one very old lady disciple, who knew where that building was. So they went to see her, and then she immediately showed them. So somehow or another, they got inspired. They made a bit more inquiry. They saw the building, and they found out that it was actually in the possession now of this developer, and that he was just about to begin tearing the place down. So they went to Radharaman. He's one of our managers in Calcutta. He's a very expert in legal affairs. So he immediately slapped an order, a stay order, on the building. I don't know whatever it was that they cooked up in the court to prevent him, the developer, from doing anything. But they stopped him. And then they actually went to see him. And it turned out he was actually quite a friendly man. He was kind of pious. when they explained this is where our Guru Maharaj met his spiritual master. You know, this is a historical site. So he understood, all right, you know, they want this place. So he agreed and he sold the building to ISKCON. So we actually own that building where Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So that's another, you know, there's the birthplace, there's that place, and there's Radha Govinda Mandir. And you can go there. If you go about 6 o'clock in the morning, you can see that's when they do the puja. It's a small place. It's not a big place. It's not so well maintained. But the deities are very nicely looked after. So it's, you know, one of the sites of Calcutta. If you can get there to see Radha Govinda, highly recommended. What time do we go to? What time is it? This is it? Okay, I mean, this is just a little glimpse. There's lots of other stuff about Prabhupada and deities. But anyway, I thought it was nice to kick off the festival with some Prabhupada nectar. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Rameshwara Prabhu. Yes.
So naturally, all the devotees from New York had come up, and the devotees from Montreal had come down. Those were the three East Coast temples.
Right.
And Prabhupada's servant at the time was Purushottama. And Prabhupada had been training him in how to do an arti to Prabhupada's deities that he was traveling with. So all the devotees went up to Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada wanted to show them how it's done. So they were having kirtan and the artik began. Purushottama was doing the artik. And he was going through all the different steps very precisely. And just as he was getting to the chamara, Prabhupada started. And Prabhupada was always in ecstasy. But Prabhupada, he started going like this with his hands. And all the devotees saw it. And Purushottama, the pujari, saw it. And he didn't know what to do. Should he stop? Was he doing something offensive? It was very unclear what Prabhupada was seeing. But then Prabhupada motioned that he should continue and finish the arti, which he did. And the devotees who were observing this later reported that they thought he had done everything precisely. So after the ceremony, Purushottama turned to Srila Prabhupada and very humbly said, "What did I forget? What did I do wrong? What did I forget?" And Prabhupada said, "You have forgotten everything for millions of births." I mean, Prabhupada was seeing him. Prabhupada was seeing his vision of introducing deity worship and awakening Krishna consciousness. So he said, "What you have forgotten is everything for millions of births. And I have come to remind you of that everything."
Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay, we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Souls that he had been accepted. Prabhupada was in the middle of an argument, yes, because he was seeing this whole ecstatic. They're being saved after millions of births.
Prabhupada was the only one.